Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 19th of June. We must tell our children, and if you're a teacher, you probably tell your students 100 times a day to pay attention. But we never teach them how to pay attention. Stress-reducing techniques that are drawn from Buddhist meditation have found their way into education in some places in the United States. Mindfulness awareness, a growing number of schools in places like Oakland and Lancaster, Pennsylvania, are slowly embracing this concept as they did the concept of yoga some 5 years ago. We'll be looking at mindfulness training, how it's working in schools, how it may perhaps make children a little bit more compassionate, maybe not, maybe it does, and look at what the research says about how effective mindfulness training is for children who are have ADD, who may be suffering from trauma-related disorders. The meditation techniques may improve mood disorders, according to research, may improve depression and self-harming behaviors like anorexia and bulimia. We have a guest with us this hour who's had a long practice in meditation and teaching mindful awareness practices to children. Her primary interest is making ancient mindful awareness practices more accessible to children. In 2001, our guest founded this Inner Kids Foundation, and she has taught hundreds of classes in school and after-school programs. She co-founded Growing Spirit, which is a family program in Los Angeles that offers the teachings of mindfulness and compassion as a resource for parents and children. She has also taught continuing education courses to attorneys regarding mindful awareness practices and the practice of law. And she speaks at professional programs throughout the country and consults with various organizations regarding the use of mindfulness practices with children. Our guest is Susan Kaiser Greenland. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. Hello, Susan.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I like this. Our reason for doing the show, actually, the inspiration came from an article in the New York Times, and I love this sentence in it. We do tell our children and our students at least 100 times a day to pay attention, particularly teachers, but we don't teach them how. We don't teach them how to pay attention.
True. It's true. We were one of the teachers, one of the Inner Kids teachers, Jean Lushtek, was at a conference a few months back, and we were all brainstorming about teaching kids how to pay attention. And he basically said just that. He said, you know, thinking back, when I was a kid, people were always telling me how to pay attention.
Right.
But asking me to pay attention, but not telling me how.
Yeah. So tell me what mindfulness in the classroom is. What are you doing with it?
Mindfulness in the classroom is simply teaching kids self-directed skills that help them better pay attention and help them better regulate themselves. They're skills that are not necessarily what you would think to be mindful awareness. We really aren't asking the kids to go home and grab a cushion and sit on it for 20 minutes and pay attention to their breath. What we're asking them to do is just slow down a bit, to really notice what's happening inside their bodies, in their minds, and in the world around them,
mm-hmm.
and to just have a pause between the full experience of the moment and their reaction to it.
And are you saying that most of us do not live that way?
Well, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but I'm a mom with two kids and a very busy household, and I have practiced mindful awareness for years in an attempt to slow myself down and better balance myself, and I certainly don't do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. These kids are in a very, very pressured world. They're aroused all the time. They're
right.
excited all the time.
Right.
And sometimes they're moving so fast that they just don't even know to slow down, and so they don't know what they're missing.
Mm-hmm. How old are your children, Susan?
I have a 15-year-old, almost 16, and I have a 13-year-old.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
You need mindfulness in your house.
Yeah.
And so do you practice it with them?
Yes, I started practicing with my, I think I started when my son was about three, and I had practiced for quite a while before, and I was interested in, I noticed how it had improved my ability to pay attention. I was practicing law at the time and very busy as a new mom and as a busy lawyer, and I found that the simple skills of slowing down, noticing my experience, and really being present in the moment with this different type of an attitude, more of an attitude of curiosity and kindness rather than an attitude of knowing or judgment. That type of attitude, that type of way of being really helped me in my life. It helped me manage the multiple chores that I had, the stress of a law practice, that sort of thing. So I figured it was working for me, and I wanted to give it a try with my kids.
Right. Now, is it a specific series of techniques that you're teaching children?
We have a set of skills. Mindful awareness is traditionally trained sequentially. And it's trained by starting with an awareness of your body, and you begin with an awareness of your breath, usually as the object of attention, and then you expand to an awareness of your sensory perceptions. I don't know how many people know we now have seven senses rather than the five senses I was raised with, but the sensory perceptions include not only seeing, hearing, tasting, feeling, and smelling, but also body sensory systems of the vestibular and the proprioceptive system.
Mm-hmm.
So once we create an awareness of our physical body, then we move to, in a settling in of the mind, of the body, we move to the mind where we become aware of thoughts and emotions that occur in the mind. But we try to just notice them and then move our attention back to the breath.
Mm-hmm.
Notice them and move our attention back to the breath. This simple practice is what trains concentration and attention. And there's science coming out now, certainly with adults, and much more recent science is coming out with children, that does show that this type of willful focus and refocusing of your attention on a specific object is likely to be rewiring the neural circuits in your brain towards attention. So we go from the body to the mind, and then we go to the third step, which is, we call it an awareness of the heart, where we talk about kindness and compassion. And that type of an attitude of openness and curiosity helps you be kind. And kids today, particularly some of the places that we teach, are so hard on themselves. And we worry so much about them being kind to other people, but, you know, actually we first need to worry about them being kind to themselves. So we do a lot of talking and feeling about kindness and being kind to ourselves. And then the last of the four steps in the sequential training is an awareness of everything that's happening around us, and that shows us about the things change and things are connected, and that's what's happening in our environment and with our friends and on the playground.
Mm-hmm. And the students, the young people, are hard on themselves in what way? What do you mean?
Well, I think that they're asked to do a lot. I mean, the test scores alone, the kind of pressure that that the teachers have on themselves for standardized test scores, you know, just gets soaked up by the kids so quickly. And they're on very busy schedules, and they often go from school into some sort of after-school program, and then they've got their homework.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem, at least in Los Angeles and California, with child obesity is enormous, and those kids tend to be extremely hard on themselves. Middle school kids, I think almost everywhere, are hard on themselves. I mean, it's not an easy time for them.
Right. And the studies that are coming out, we've done shows recently on the studies concerning mental health and mindfulness training and what it is you can do to be able to take care of your own disease. This is, a lot of the work is being done in Madison with monks, Buddhist monks. Yeah, I'm sure you're very familiar with it. It is remarkable work, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's exciting. We try not to oversell that because it's such new science. And it is being done with adults, but he's obviously, you know, a world-class scientist, and the work he's coming out with is extraordinary. And if we can extrapolate from that, that these types of changes are made through self-directed practices that adults are using, that changed their brain. Just think of what might happen with children where their brains are much more malleable than adults.
All right, now tell me how you do this. Walk into a classroom. Here, Susan, you're walking into a classroom, a public school. Pick the age of the students. What do you do?
Well, it depends on the age. My emphasis is on pre-K through middle school. But somewhere in the middle, if we're talking about a fourth grade class, which is pretty much in the middle, we go in and we tell them first what mindful awareness is. And our definition for kids is mindful awareness is paying attention to what's happening now with a new kind of attitude, with one of curiosity and kindness. And we talk to them about noticing what's happening right now, not what happened before when we were having breakfast and not what's happening later after school, but really trying to settle into what's happening right now. And then we go into some simple breathing, seated breathing work where we, it depends on the age of the child, but often we use a movement component to help them settle into their bodies. One of the things we do is we sway back and forth like a pendulum to the sound of a stringed instrument where they sway back and forth until they find through movement a feeling of comfortable feeling of center on the cushion. And then they'll sit there feeling their breath for a period of time that extends depending on how long we've been in there and how long the kids can pay attention. And we start with short periods of time frequently, and we extend that period of time over the course of our class.
And you are doing this a couple times a week, is that right?
Well, it depends on the classroom. Usually for the older kids, we go in once a week. For the younger kids, we go in twice a week. But the ultimate goal would be to train classroom teachers so that they would be able to just incorporate it into their day.
Yes. And has that happened?
It's starting to happen. A great story is we had two teachers, Annika Harris and Jean Lushtak, taught at Toluca Lake Elementary School just this term. And there was a student teacher in that class who sat through the class for 12 weeks. He now has gotten a full-time classroom, a sixth-grade classroom, I believe, that started in summer school, and we just heard back that he's now doing the same practices with the kids himself. So that's just very gratifying to all of us.
What's the difference in terms of effectiveness or in terms of how the children take to this between mindfulness and yoga?
Well, it's a little different. Mindfulness is really a focus on the attentional component, on the attentional component of focusing on an object. And also, one thing about mindfulness, it's the awareness of something. It's the awareness of the breath, for example, that changes your relationship to the breath, body, and mind. And let me go a little more on that point, which is that in yoga, often you'll manipulate the breath. Not always, but often you'll manipulate the breath to achieve positive benefit. In mindfulness, we don't manipulate the breath. We look at it, we feel it, not thinking about it, but actually feeling it just as it is. What usually happens, if you just, even if you tried it right now, or if you're listening at home, you want to try it, settle into your chair, just take a couple deep breaths. Maybe you want to put your hand on your belly and feel the rising and the falling of the breath in the belly. And you may notice that just by feeling your breath, just by being aware of it, but not doing anything to it at all, the breath will slowly start to change. That it tends to get a little slower. It tends to get a little deeper. And the space between the in and the out tends to get a little longer. And once we start noticing that by just slowing down in our experience and being aware of something, things will automatically start to change without our necessarily having to do something, like a relaxation response, for example, will set in. That's how we begin the process of really being aware of everything that's happening in and around us in the moment. So we start with our breath, we move to our body, we move to our hearts and minds, we move to everything.
So it's probably pretty healthy for everything inside you, right?
Yeah, there's science that is certainly coming out that besides the extraordinary work that's coming out of Madison with respect to the changes in the brain. There's a recent study that just came out of UPenn about changes in attention. But there's also great work that's coming out about how it balances the two types of nervous systems, and, you know, where our nervous systems get out of whack when we're under stress, and that this just triggers a relaxation response that helps bring those nervous systems back into balance. So while not a scientist at all, I've I've read the research, and I find it pretty convincing, not only by reading it, but also in seeing it in action.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, what headway you've made in schools? Is this just a few schools in the country at this point in time? Is this a growing movement, Susan?
It's certainly a growing movement. We have a very small foundation here that my husband and I started in 2001, and we have never looked for work. We get calls, and then we try to accommodate as many as we can, and we have never been able to meet the need that we are being asked to meet. So it certainly is growing. We haven't really ever been in a sales posture trying to go out and get schools on board, so I really can't speak to that.
Right. We're going to welcome phone calls for Susan. We have a number of people already lined up.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so we'll go in just a second with phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Susan Kaiser-Greenland is our guest, founder and executive director of the Inner Kids Foundation. She has a long practice in meditation and teaching mindful awareness practices to children. She and her husband founded the Inner Kids Foundation, and she has taught hundreds of classes in school and after-school programs. She's also the co-founder of Growing Spirit, which is a family program in Los Angeles offering the teachings of mindfulness and compassion as a resource for parents and for children. We're going to take your calls. Here's the number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. We're talking about how we can learn through mindfulness awareness to pay attention, and also how this can cultivate compassion by reflecting on our emotions before we do something rash. So, to your calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, we'll be speaking with the author of If They Only Listen to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to Hear. Melinda Henneberger, after the 2004 election, set out across the country. She listened to women of all ages and occupations, and they expressed their opinions on the major issues of our time. She discovered how unheard women feel, how ignored and disregarded by both major parties and by most politicians. She will join us the second hour. All right, let's go to phone calls now for Susan, 800-486-8655. And we are talking about mindfulness training in the classroom. Susan Kaiser-Greenland is the founder and executive director of Inner Kids Foundation, and she has done this training in many schools, public and private. Let's start our calls with Robert from Madison. Hi, Robert.
Hi. How are you, Joy?
It's Kathleen, but I'm fine.
I'm sorry, Kathleen.
That's all right.
I'm a therapist in Madison. I work with youth, very troubled, some of them even sexual offenders. Almost all of them have ADD or ADHD. I'm a practicing Buddhist myself. I've tried to incorporate mindfulness, but I see these kids 1 hour a week. And just the sitting meditation isn't really engaging them. Do you have any tutorials or anything available that could be used outside of a classroom? All of my kids are spread throughout the state, so it's hard to bring them all together.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and we are working on that. For my own practice with kids, I have a website, a community website set up where they can get on and they can talk to other people who are learning the same skills, and where we can upload guided practices for them to do. But speaking to the issue of ADD, which is a very important issue to me, there are a couple of things to remember. First is the Mindful Awareness Research Center at UCLA has been doing some work with ADD in kids, and they recently finished a study that was very promising with Sue Smalley and Diana Winston and Lydia Zykowska of the effect of mindful awareness on ADD and ADHD teens and adults. And so hopefully you'll be seeing something about that soon. My experience with kids with ADD is that the sitting still part of mindful awareness can sometimes be just excruciating for them. And we don't need to be aware. Mindful awareness is not just a sitting practice. Mindful awareness is very much can be a moving practice. That's where these practices of the swaying comes back and forth, the rocking back and forth. If you look through history, most attention training, many, many traditions will either sway or rock, or they will move back and forth like davening, or they will pace.
Right.
And this is helpful. The movement itself is helpful in training attention. So with kids who have attention issues, I really make a point of not needing for them to sit still, but working on ways that they can move but focus their attention. It's about the focusing of the attention, not necessarily keeping the body still in the first instance.
Mm-hmm. Is that helpful, Robert?
Yes, it was. Are you planning on maybe publishing a book on this?
I was just going to say the same thing. We need a book on this, Susan.
Yeah,
I'm working
on it.
I
am working on it, and we're hopeful that something will be out soon. But it's not out yet, unfortunately.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks. Bye.
Let's go to Paul next from Milwaukee. Hello, Paul.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Good.
Susan, I have some really cool questions for you.
Uh-huh.
I'm a high school health teacher in Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
And I have two units that are extremely huge. One is mental health, and then the other one is sexuality. When you take those two health issues and what we call youth risk factors, it really is the bulk of the problems kids are having, particularly youth. We are looking to create what we call a healing high school. We think that in order to reduce violence, it's not putting most police on the street. It's helping individuals recognize who they are, what they're dealing with, exactly what you're talking about. Slow down. Who are you? What's your relationship to everything going on in your world? How can you keep control of yourself when maybe others around you cannot?
My question
for you would be, how would you see helping kids practice this on a regular basis in the high school health classroom so that they create those techniques for themselves? Because they get a lot of really great curriculum, but they need skills. They need technique.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And if you look on our website, we have a couple websites. One is www.innerkids.org, and that connects to our blog or wiki, which is www.ikwiki.org. If you scroll through there, there's a lot of information. Much of the research about mindful awareness is up there, but there's also a number of podcasts that are, you know, guided exercises, for lack of a better word, that talk through some of the very simple self-directed skills that we teach. So that's a place to start. And hopefully, you know, we'll have a book coming out soon. But as a general rule, I think it's a systems issue, and we can teach the kids, and that's a good place to start, but we need to teach the parents, and we need to teach the teachers, and we need to teach the administration, and we need everyone to get on board. What we've found is that by teaching these kids these tools, it is almost always the case that stories come back to us, how they bring these skills home and apply them in their daily life, how there's some traffic in the parents are getting upset and the kids in the back seat start singing the breathing song, or how we have a tone that we hit in the class where when the tone gets hit, everyone just quiets down, settles into their body, and needs to breathe for a moment and just stop and pause. And some families have brought that tone at home, and the parents have been in arguments, and the kids have pulled it out and hit the tone, rung the tone, and then the parents need to stop in their arguments. It's a wonderful, wonderful way of empowering the kids and bringing this whole idea into the system.
What is it, a drum or?
No, it's a bar. It's like a tone bar.
I see.
It makes it's like a bell, and it makes a pretty sound. And
mm-hmm.
It's just a nice way of reminding us to just stop and be mindful and see what we're doing right then,
right
in the moment.
Yeah. Is there a correlation, have there been studies on this, Susan, between mindfulness training and a decrease in violence on the playground in the classroom?
There have not, those studies have not been in place yet, but that's what we're starting. I just finished a pre-K study with the Mindful Awareness Research Center at UCLA where we studied the effect on four-year-olds, but the results aren't in yet. There's a study that's coming out of Stanford shortly that studied these types of things. I'm in the middle of a mindful eating study at UC San Francisco with fourth and fifth graders about eating more mindfully, and there are more studies scheduled next year at UCLA through Mindful Awareness Research Center. So the research on this is just beginning to come out with kids, but we're hoping to have some evidence base for this work.
Thank you, Paul, for the call. Gigi is next. Hi, Gigi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I have been doing yoga for many years and doing all these wonderful mindful practices. But I have a thought in my brain that I cannot get rid of. Somebody said it was like stuck in a rut. Same thought. Are there any ways to deal with the same thought and get it out?
Is it a bad thought?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is it a scary thought?
Well, it's a self-esteem thought. And I don't. And for the last 7 years, I've been saying that to myself. I'm old enough and wise enough not to believe it. But does that mean I have to have it recur all the time?
And how does your body feel when... And is this, does this thought come when you're walking around or when you're doing your yoga?
Whenever. Well, sometimes when I do my yoga, then I'm free of all thoughts. You know, I'm concentrating in the moment. So I know it's my brain. I don't want to believe it. I can take charge of it, but still, it's
always there.
So
it sounds like you understand it, but it hasn't really, this understanding hasn't really gotten into your body yet. So how does your body feel when this thought comes? Have you ever stopped and noticed what's happening to my breath now, or how is my body reacting to this thought?
Oh, no.
That's an idea. We call these mental habits. And it's no different than biting your nails, and some of them are positive and some of them are negative. But anything that comes to mind frequently like that is just a mental habit. And so if we can defang it and kind of break it away from the emotion and just see it as a habit like anything else. And so when you're walking around and it comes up, you can just really stop. Try not to get on the train of that mental habit. Try to just stop, key into what your body is feeling then, and just settle into your breath and just note it as mental habit. And my guess is, although I can't promise, is that you do this over and over and over again. And it may not first end the habit, but it almost always changes your relationship to the habit.
Okay.
So I'd be curious. You have my website, so please email me and let me know what happens.
All right.
Thanks, Gigi.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Phil is next from Edgerton. Hello, Phil.
Yes. You kind of went pretty much around the edge of it, but I have become, I think, probably hypersensitive awareness. And I have found that your body, of course, we know tells you when there's heat or cold or pain, but the body is actually communicating with me at all times, and sometimes we're not aware of that.
Yeah. That's exactly right. That's exactly right, and that's what we're trying to teach our kids, to just develop this intuitive body, felt sense body skill in the same way that they develop their conceptual thinking skills. In schools, especially with the pull towards standardized tests, we're really, really exercising that brain and that thinking muscle, you know, to the detriment of the full body intuitive muscle, for lack of a better word. So if we can just start shifting that emphasis a little bit, you know, obviously critical thinking is important, but we'll be able to do a better job of critical thinking if we become really centered and aware of what our other senses are telling us.
Now, is there a part of this? I want to talk more about compassion, about kindness. Is mindfulness training directed toward that? Are we reflecting on what our emotions are, whether we're angry, whether we're happy, any of those while we're doing this breathing? Or how does compassion figure in?
Well, there's a couple things about compassion. First, there's a very interesting study that just came out of Duke University, I believe, on self-compassion that really was talking about the physical and the mental benefits for people who just are kinder to themselves. And that is interesting work that we're going to want to be looking at a little bit more closely. But with respect to mindfulness training, a couple of things happen. We do pay attention to more things than our breath. The breath is the starting point, and the breath is a good place to begin to train attention. But once we stabilize our attention with the attention of the breath, then we open up our attention to other areas of experience, and that includes thoughts and emotions. So thoughts and emotions will be thoughts of judgment or thoughts of kindness or thoughts of joy or thoughts of sorrow, and we start noticing those in the moment and looking at them in hopefully a little bit more objective way. So with respect to compassion, what happens naturally, we believe, as a byproduct of being aware and being less habituated in a response, responding to an event rather than just reacting to it out of habit, is it develops a little bit of space between what your thought is and what your reaction to it is, and as you tease that out and have that space, you're more able to see what's happening around you more clearly, and then you're usually better able to see other people's points of view, better able to laugh, better able to be a little gentler to people, better able to be a little gentler to yourself. So it's a process, and it takes practice like anything else, and it takes practice when you're outside, when you're in a calm place, as opposed to when you're in the middle of a conflict. But over time, we have seen that these practices do work.
Even in the middle of a conflict?
Even in the middle. We see
really?
It happen on the playground. We get all sorts of anecdotal reports back where the kids are using the mindful awareness in the classroom. They're developing the skills when they're not in a conflict. And then when they're out in a conflict, it doesn't blow up in the way that it would otherwise, because the kids notice what they're doing and step back.
Thanks so much for the call. We go next to Jackie from Milwaukee. Hello, Jackie.
Good morning. Good
Hi.
Morning. What a great conversation. I wanted to share that back in the 80s, from about 1979 up until about 1986, the City of Milwaukee Health Department received a major grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to fund wellness programs for the citizens of the City of Milwaukee.
Oh, my, really?
Yes, and that included going into schools.
Uh-huh.
And I was a health educator at the time. I'm no longer doing that. And I was specifically working in the area of mental health for the idea of wellness. And one of the things I did with the citizens, but in the school system, was teach stress management techniques, relaxation techniques, based upon mindfulness training. And I'm wondering if, or perhaps she has or hasn't heard about that, and that there might be a lot of good data, because we had to send information in to Robert Wood Johnson in order to continue the grant and the results of the work we were doing. I don't know how much of it would be specific to the stress management or, in this instance, mindfulness training, but it would be, it might have something that you can look at.
That is so helpful. Thank you. I wasn't aware of that program, and I will absolutely track that down, because that information would be very, very helpful.
It sure would be. I wasn't aware of it, and I've lived here all that time as well. Can you two get a hold of each other? Can you get a hold of Susan somehow here? Do you have her email address?
Sure, but you could just email info, I-N-F-O, at innerkids, innerkids.org. And I would love to talk to you more about that. I wonder if that work was based on Jon Kabat-Zinn's work, his mindfulness-based stress reduction.
I don't think so. It was at that time there was a variety of work out. You know, the I'm blanking out. It's been such a long time. Forgive me. It was on other kinds of things that were relevant specifically to stress management techniques and relaxation. But I myself was very familiar with Buddhist training. And so I did things, I incorporated it, that information with it. So it wasn't specific to that. But there's still data there. And it was a wonderful program. The citizens of Milwaukee Beyond the School had a lot of opportunities. I taught in libraries. I went to businesses. And then that changed. And we were one of three cities that received this grant from Robert Wood Johnson.
Jackie, start it up again.
Well...
Why not?
That would be great.
Yeah, it would be, really.
You know, one of the interesting things, too, is that at the time, and I'm sure that still is going, thank you, by the way, one of the things that people said, well, little kids couldn't do this. Well, I was just surprised how well the little children, I'm talking about, you know, preschoolers included, but mostly first, second, and third graders, really took to the relaxation training. A lot of imagery training.
Right,
and
right.
Just paying attention to your breath, and don't worry, you know, just all of that stuff. So I just wanted to share that.
Oh, thanks,
and
Jackie.
Let me just make sure I got that. info@innerkids.org.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
or
you,
Jackie. Or if you just go to the website, innerkids.org, you'll be able to track me down.
Hmm.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for the call. Mm-hmm. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about mindfulness training, which is slowly finding its way into classrooms all over the country as a way of helping young students and older students as well to learn how to pay attention. And also, perhaps a byproduct of it, as our guest says, is teaching them compassion. Our guest is Susan Kaiser Greenland. She is the founder of the Inner Kids Foundation, also the executive director. She has a long practice in meditation and teaching mindful awareness practices to children. She founded the Inner Kids Foundation a few years ago, and she has taught hundreds of classes in schools. She is also the co-founder of Growing Spirit, a family program in L.A. offering the teachings of mindfulness and compassion as a resource for parents and children. Two more phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us the second hour of our program this Tuesday, the author of If They Only Listen to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to Hear. Back to phone calls now, and we go to Dave from Madison. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. I was listening. I respect your right to do this practice and stuff, but I would strongly disagree with you practicing this in the public schools, because I feel that, you know, as I was listening, the word Buddhism came up twice, and I feel this is an introductory form of practice into the Buddhist religion, and I feel that religion should not be in the public schools. As much as you feel it helps children, my children get help from praying to the God that we believe in. So I strongly disagree with what you're doing here.
That's not really praying, is it?
Hmm?
You're not really praying.
No, I so appreciate the question. I really am happy that you brought that up, because it gives me the opportunity to talk about it, because I think it's a very legitimate concern. I'm not a Buddhist, and I wouldn't be at all pleased if any religion was being taught to my kids in their school. As I said, I've got a 13-year-old and 16-year-old, so I really appreciate the question. No, I'm not teaching Buddhism. This isn't prayer, and it's not Buddhism, and it's not. We're talking about just slowing kids down and having them notice what's happening in their mind and body, and that's very different than prayer, or what I understand prayer to be, which is, you know, it's a contemplative practice where you're actually, communicating with something greater than yourself or someone greater than yourself. So this is not at all what we're doing with these kids. All we're trying to do is turn the current emphasis on kids thinking and doing a little bit upside down and have them just slow down a little bit, stop and smell the roses, realize what they're missing by rushing so much, key into their bodies, which they are really so busy in their heads, like so much of us as adults are so busy thinking and doing and not just breathing and being. So I would not teach Buddhism in the school. I don't agree with it. I wouldn't want my kids to be taught religion in the school. So I'm really happy that you brought that up, and it's just not at all what we're doing.
Do you find that, and then we'll move on to another call, do you find that there are some in schools who are concerned about this, because there are techniques, of course, in this that have, I mean, we witnessed the collaboration between Buddhist monks and the University of Wisconsin
sure.
Medical School, that there are techniques that come from a Buddhist tradition. They could come from other traditions as well.
Yeah, well, if you look at all contemplative traditions, whether it's there's Christian mysticism, there's Jewish mysticism, there's Buddhist meditation, all contemplative traditions, when you get very serious contemplative traditions, have a training in meditation of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, and these practices certainly have been used for thousands of years in that way. But that's, this is
attentional training is very old, but that doesn't mean that we can't take out of the training attention part of these practices and use it to help our kids learn to pay a better attention, because it's a skill that, as we know from the rise of ADD and ADHD, is actually kind of fading away. But there was one other thing that I just lost it.
That's all right. It'll come back.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Beth from Richland Center next. Hi, Beth.
Good morning. Susan, I just simply want to take a slow walk with you or sit someplace and just listen to you talk and not
Thank
even
you.
Open my mouth. Your voice is just so like a balm to my nerves.
Thank you.
It really shows that you've been doing your breathing. My question has a couple of facets to it, and I promised Jerome, the intern, who is a delightful person, I think, that
he
I
is,
would be
yes.
concise,
okay.
Your new intern. I am wondering what effects you have noticed of this kind of working with children, young people, and then perhaps to some adults who have a background and a history of pretty serious abuse. I'm talking about people who have become hyper-risible at an early age. I think you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Rather than the response to any kind of stimulus takes a certain amount of time in a more or less normal person, someone who has been threatened a great deal or abused at an early age, the nervous system is actually altered
mm-hmm.
to be very, very fast. I'm one of those people, and I have to say that mindfulness practice has really done wonders for me. But as you pointed out with earlier about some children who are very, very active and sitting still just is not the thing for them, moving mindfulness has been, even at the age of 55, I have to move. I don't hold still. For me, contact improvisation, which is a dance form that is kind of like to dance what jazz is to music,
mm-hmm.
Which is profoundly and always mindful, as well as very, very playful, has made a brilliant difference. I just took a workshop in Mazomanie with a fantastic teacher named Keith Hennessy, and it did me a world of good. But I'm really curious about what you have noticed with people who are particularly, you know, they have a history
mm-hmm.
of abuse and neglect where their nervous system is super
Yeah, well,
fast.
This is a population that is very close to my heart. And I have done work in domestic violence clinics or schools, and I hope to continue that work and deepen that work. There's a lot of considerations if you're working with mindfulness and victims of abuse or trauma or domestic violence. And the most significant one that anyone who works with kids in this or anyone in this population has to be very aware of is the problem of flooding, which is when you ask a child to sit and notice what's happening in their bodies, sometimes memories or sense impressions can come up that are just that they're remembering from previous experiences that are just too much for them or, frankly, for anyone to bear. And it just re-traumatizes them. And this is something that needs to be really paid attention to and avoided at all costs, which is why I don't work in a domestic violence setting without working with a therapist. So I think that working with kids in mindfulness and domestic violence or victims of trauma is just very, very important work, but it needs to be done with great care and with the help of, a mental health professional.
Mm-hmm.
But I also agree with what you said about the moving with these kids. Closing eyes, lying still. These are very, very, sitting still. These are very, very difficult things to ask of somebody who's the victim of some sort of abuse. But gentle movement, the rocking back and forth, slow and silent walking, dance type movements, stretching, that sort of thing, in a way that's slow and very careful and bringing your attention back to what you're doing, just taking the attention back to the breath, taking the attention back to the movement slowly and gently over and over again can help them try to work through some of these things without bringing so much back so quickly that it re-traumatizes
yeah.
them.
Thank you, Beth, so much for your call. Let's go next to Chris from Milwaukee. We have a couple lines open. They've been busy. I'll give you the number again, 800-486-8655. Or in Milwaukee, it's 227-2050. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. You bring to mind experiences that happened 40 years ago. I'm sure you're aware of the Turner tradition of mind, spirit, and body, and we are now coming back to it, it seems. But I taught exceptional ed high school students 2 years ago who were really hyper, and it was a small class, and at the end of the hour, we would get down on top of these long tables, and I would take them through deep breathing exercises and visualization. And that's something that I've done with students for the last 40 years. It isn't religion, but it's a matter of them controlling and being in charge of their own body. And it was a class I took 1948 when I transferred to Madison. It was required in the Phi Ed department, a fourth of a credit in relaxation. And
fabulous.
That sort of saved my life. But I'm always amused that we have now relaxation classes and massage classes, and this is an old art, and I'm sure I would be dead today personally if I had not learned before doing a live show or in a play or any stressful time doing that deep breathing and relaxation. But kids love it. My students would rush up from the bottom floor. This was at Fritchie Middle School, middle school kids. And they knew when they came in the room, they would go to their tables, put their heads down, and do deep breathing, and I would tell them a story. And kids don't have these kind of visions anymore. We've got the violence of television, and when you see violence and when you have it, it's hard to get those visions out of your mind. So I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, but, you know, there's some of us old-timers that have been doing that with kids in one form or another for the last 50 years.
Oh, I so know, and I so appreciate the work that you have all put in. And I do believe very much that part of this is many of us coming home. I think part of it is many of us, I'm in my 50s, raising children, realizing that they're missing something that existed in the slower pace of my childhood. And those afternoons of just noodling around and not really having anything to do or any place to go, and the days of playing make-believe and pretend, and not having the television set on or a video game, they have to be created now. They're not automatic. And I wonder what our kids are losing by the loss of that time. So I so appreciate the work you've done, and I'm very, very aware and grateful for, you know, the generations of people before us who have brought this work forward.
Thank you, Chris, so much for the call. Stephanie from Madison, hi.
Hi there, Kathleen, and hi there, Susan. This is a really wonderful program. I basically want to call and just try to succinctly and briefly make a personal comment. I was born with visual impairments. I've gradually gone legally blind. I'm able to see well enough to see the big picture, like a lousy TV picture, but I've lost my ability to read without technology. I'm also was diagnosed as an adult with ADD. I had it from the time I was a little kid, and back in the 50s. I'm 57 now, and I was diagnosed probably maybe about 11, 12 years ago, and it's just been very profound. I've just really been able to understand it, and I've always wanted to take a mindfulness class. I finally took one. We have a hospital. There's a physical therapist who uses a lot of yoga and Tai Chi and mindfulness. She's been trained by Kabat-Zinn, and she teaches a mindfulness class where she incorporates Tai Chi fundamentals in the class also to get us moving. And we started doing learning the body scans and learning you know, the learning the breathing. And I've taken other meditation classes. This is the most practicable.
Yeah.
You can take it with you anywhere.
Yeah. For those of, if there's anyone listening who doesn't know of Jon Kabat-Zinn, Jon Kabat-Zinn is a molecular biologist, I believe. He's out of University of Massachusetts. And 25 years ago, he started the Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction Clinic at UMass and has really been the forerunner in secularizing this work. He's done an amazing job of bringing this work to the general public and of building a science around it, so that the science now understands what is happening in the minds and bodies through doing these self-directed practices.
Yeah, Susan, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Get the book done. I don't want to put pressure on you, but get the book done. There's a need for it. And again, the website is innerkids.org?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Susan Kaiser Greenland, founder and executive director of Inner Kids Foundation, and we thank her for a really interesting hour, wasn't it? Talking about mindfulness training and bringing it to classrooms all over the country as a way to get students to learn how to pay attention, and with a byproduct of compassion. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Jerome Owens for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee, and thanks everybody for your calls and for listening, for paying attention. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then we'll return on the Ideas Network.